No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I am joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. One of the missions of this show is to let the world know that the nation's capital is disenfranchised, that this situation is unfair, and more importantly, it is undemocratic. We are the only nation in the world to treat citizens with such disregard, and this must stop. So as we approach Christmas, we thought we should refocus attention on the people of the District of Columbia and our effort to become equal citizens through statehood. To help us in our discussion, we have invited an old friend, Anise Jenkins, the president of Stand Up for Democracy, back to the show to give us an update on what's going on with statehood in the district. Anise is a longstanding advocate for D.C. statehood. She holds an MBA from Howard University and has led the fight for D.C. statehood for more than 20 years. We're happy to have her back on the show, and we hope you will join in the discussion by calling us at 888-429-5471 or Skype us at BBS Radio 2. Before we get started, let me introduce my lovely and talented co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who is joining us from the great state of Arizona. And I refer to her as my lovely and talented co-host because I have yet to get a Christmas present from her. So I'm sucking up as much as I can. Welcome, Kathleen. Thanks for getting the conversation started.
Oh, you're more than welcome, Senator Brown. And you are getting a gift. I'm coming to visit you and stay with you for 2 weeks. That's my present for you. And I know you're so excited just to see me yet once again. It's been so long. Yes.
I didn't even ask Santa for that.
I know. See what happens? You didn't even ask in here. I'm coming to see you. So there you go.
I'm definitely on the naughty list then this year.
Well, thank you, the audience, for listening. And thank you, Anise. We've got you on the line or with us to talk about something that I feel I'm still always shocked by, that D.C. voters don't have the right, or, you know, citizens. They vote, but it's very limited. You aren't a state. You're losing out on a lot of your rights that most everyone else enjoy. And it just amazes me that it's taken so long, and I hope not too much longer. How are you?
I'm doing just wonderful. Nice to talk to both of you. I know you both are very strong statehood supporters, and this is a great way to end the year.
Yes, it is. This is our last show. That's right.
And you know what? Before we get into this, I'd just like to say to Anise, and I don't want to embarrass her because I know she's a very humble person, but in all the darkest years in our fight for statehood, Anise was the standard bearer. She was the keeper of the flame. She stood up there, and she always stood up for statehood. And I truly believe there were times in that period in the 1990s and early 2000s, that the movement would have died without Anise. So
I hope think you people give me way too much credit.
No, that's not true. You really have always been an eloquent spokesman for this cause, and I so much appreciate all you do for the people of D.C. So tell us a little bit about what's going on with Stand Up for Democracy these days.
Well, Stand Up for Democracy, we ended basically a six-month project in which we talked to people who came to D.C. from all over the world, really, and just told them the situation in D.C. that you are now coming to do a visit to the nation's last plantation, where the citizens, 600 and over 30,000, have no voice in their local government. And it's just extraordinary. This is what we did for 6 months, just going out, standing in front of the White House, standing in front of the Wilson Building, where that electronic billboard ticks off how many federal taxes, millions of federal taxes we're taking per year. And we're paying per year. And it was just really amazing and heartening to see how shocked people were to learn that the people in the nation's capital are totally just disenfranchised, live under the Congress as colonists, and the fact that most people, and I'm saying overwhelmingly, most people thought it was wrong.
Yeah. That's certainly been my experience as I travel around the country, is that people don't understand the situation we're in. And when we explain it to them, I mean, it's very, very rare that we get a person that doesn't agree that we should have the same rights that every other American has. And of course, there's an important survey that was done by the advocacy group DC Vote that showed that 80% of Americans do in fact believe that we should have the same rights they do. And of course, absolutely, we're Americans. Why shouldn't we? You have those rights in Arizona, don't you, Kathleen?
Yes, and I'd like to ask you a question. When you were talking to these, I guess they were visitors from, you know, out of the country as well as, you know, from other states. Did one of the things that, because what I hear all the time from, you know, different groups as well, you know, is because D.C. would be a Democratic state, you know, and the balance of power would be shifted. I mean, is that something you hear from people who are truly, you know, kind of like, wow, you guys don't have the same kind of rights that we do? I mean, do you hear that as a reason why you shouldn't be a state?
First of all, it was very rare that people said we shouldn't. So,
right.
I was really, to be honest with you, I was really surprised, because I'm thinking the people in Congress, the senators and representatives, are representing the views of their constituents. So I'm thinking the constituents are going to say, oh, you know, you shouldn't have it. So that was one thing that really surprised me, was I didn't hear very often that we shouldn't have it. But the few times that I did, and we're going to issue an analysis and say, you know, where the lack of support is and who, what demographic and what age and what race and what party affiliation. We will be issuing a report very soon. But the main reason that I heard, which was on a very rare occasion, was that there would be mainly Democratic senators, members of the Democrat Party, but they didn't see this as a reason that we shouldn't be entitled to our rights. They just saw that as perhaps what would occur, but they never said, well, you should not. I mean, very rarely, I shouldn't say never, but that was very rarely the reason for them thinking that it was right that we should not have all the rights of every other citizen. It just appeared to be wrong. I mean,
well,
it was just a no-brainer for most.
And, you know, that's always been the argument not always the argument, but often the argument in the modern statehood struggle. You know, if you look at how states were entered into the Union, they're all different phases, you know, the original 13 colonies and then states that were added in the South and North, and then territories that were purchased. And of course, the whole Missouri Compromise thing, where you had slave states and non-slave states. But in the modern struggle for statehood, we've certainly seen that argument used many times. They said that Alaska would always be Democrat, and Hawaii would always be Republican. And it's funny, you know, I can't remember the last time Hawaii elected a Republican, and I think there's one Democrat in Alaska. So those things never came to fruition. And of course, they change over time too. Certainly, if we became a state tomorrow, I would be willing to bet that our first two senators would be Democrats. But who knows? 30 years from now.
That's
and,
right.
And
I
that's
mean,
what's
important.
The party
of Lincoln, a lot of people say that's totally flipped over. So,
Well, and you know,
I'm
sorry, Anise. Some of our favorite sons were Republicans, right? Frederick Douglass was a Republican.
Absolutely. My father was a Republican. A lot of black people were Republicans at one time.
Absolutely. Because a lot of Democrats were in the South were segregationists. So, yes, Doc, I think, you know, this always seems to surprise young people that Martin Luther King was a Republican.
That's true. They just assume he's a Democrat, or a liberal progressive.
Yeah.
But I forget that point, too, and I'm always surprised when you say that, Michael.
Yep. We'd love to claim them in the Democratic Party, you know, tend to think of them as Democrats because we think of all the good guys as Democrats, right? But certainly that's not the case. And you know what? The Republican Party would so benefit by having a man like Martin Luther King in their, Dr. King in their party these days, or Frederick Douglass, or, you know, Abraham Lincoln. Actually, they're really have gotten too far to the right, and they need to come back, and they need people that, you know, I hate to use the L word, but that are more liberal to bring them back.
Let me ask you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to point out that we have had Republican council members. Carol Swartz was on our council because the D.C. law is that, what is it, that our council cannot be a majority of one party. It can be a majority of one party, but we have to reserve some seats for the non-majority party. So, I mean, we've had Republicans on the council.
Yes, and we have to have two seats. And it was actually the Republicans that undid Carol Swartz, not the Democrats. You know, her own party turned on her, and she would still be in there, I'm sure. She was very, very well liked.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a question. You know, one of the things that I kind of have trouble with in a lot of aspects is getting people involved in an issue or getting them off of their couches and away from the TVs and the football games to become involved. And, you know, I'm always amazed that people aren't more active in D.C. to become stated, to make it, you know, understand how this is going to benefit them and to take action. And, you know, a lot of times I've attended with Senator Brown on some of the stuff that he's done. And it's, you know, like everything, the same, pretty much the same faces that have been hanging in there and fighting for the cause. So what do you feel is something that could turn, you know, people around in D.C., the residents to kind of, you know, say, okay, we got to join in. We really got to do this as every community, Hispanic, African-American, Anglo, whatever it is you want to call the residents there, to fight for what they deserve.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of the people who are involved, like me, like Senator Brown, like other people in the statehood movement, to draw a connection between the lack of rights, the lack of local self-control, and how it affects people's lives. Like when we were fighting for needle exchange, when we were fighting to reduce the spread of HIV and AIDS in D.C., and the Congress continually prohibited us from using our own local funds on needle exchange. And I think those are things that are very important, drawing a connection, making a direct connection between the lack of self-determination and your health, or the lack of funds for D.C. schools, and the fact that if we were a state, we could have over $2 billion more in our budget. I think that's what really matters. People, when they hear you talk about statehood or even voting rights, it seems to be a kind of abstract thing where, oh, you know, that's something I'll take care of, that's something that I really want to do, but I have to think about the mortgage, I have to think about housing, I have to think about jobs. So you really have to be able, and we have to be able as activists, to make that connection. And I think, it also works well when there's a crisis. I got involved when the Congress took over D.C. Under Senator Faircloth from North Carolina. It was just a direct assault on our local self-determination. So crisis seems to work, and also making an ongoing connection between your life, your basic rights, and self-determination and statehood. And I think that's a battle that we're still facing, that we still have not really gotten into as much as we should.
Well, you know, I think that's so true. And people should know that the District of Columbia has the highest incidence of new HIV cases, which is, you know, certainly in some respect due to the fact that the needle exchange program that we were going to pay for with our own tax dollars was really put off for 10 years because the Congress kept on taking the money out of the budget. But also on top of that, we have one of the highest incidences of breast cancer in America, and we have the highest incidence of type 2 diabetes, and this stuff is not coincidental. I mean, there's reasons for this, and you're right. We absolutely have to connect the dots for people in that regard. And we saw recently, on your other point, Anise, about crisis, we saw that we got some press and we got some people agitated over the government shutdown. That was another thing that seemed to motivate people a little bit, was the fact that the government had shut down and the federal government shutdown was going to affect the District of Columbia because we're a wholly owned subsidiary of the federal government. And that sort of got people angry and a little bit motivated. But now that's gone away and the anger's gone away. You know, it's like you and I were talking about last week, Kathleen, about the gun thing and the fact that Newtown, Connecticut, they just did a survey that showed that about 20% less people were concerned about the gun laws than they were a year ago, because those things make the headlines and then they wane and people forget about them. So we got to figure out a way to keep this on the front burner.
Well, I think that's why your radio show is so important. And us grabbing the control of the media is so important, because the media a lot of times they like to jump from one thing to another, and people don't get a chance to really focus and get into depth on things. It's just one thing after another. And it's kind of, after a while, people get weary of it.
Yes,
but if we can control our own media, I think that will make a big difference, to just focus on things that really matter and get some of this noise in the media that's really unimportant, at least, you know, if you're trying to live a better life, you know, just get out of it, get rid of it. And radio shows like yours, TV shows, the internet, these are sources and tools that we can use to really keep the drumbeat going.
Well, I hope so. And since we're on the subject, let's just talk a little bit about some of the positive and negatives that have been going on lately. Tim Waits, Congressman Tim Waits from Minnesota's 1st District, signed on to the statehood bill last week, bringing the total number of co-signers up to 64. So that's a good thing. We also met with people from Mike Enzi's office, and Senator Enzi is a senator from Wyoming who has traditionally not supported us, but certainly his staff seem receptive to looking into the new bill and trying to convince the senator to help us in our quest to get a hearing in the Senate before the Committee on Homeland Security and Government Operations, which is where the bill now stands. So those have been some positive things that have happened over the last week. But let's also talk about Jim Jordan. And I know you know a lot about similar situations that have happened over the years, Anise. But Jim Jordan is a congressman from Ohio, who was not elected by anybody in the District of Columbia, but who has introduced legislation to overturn D.C.'s gun laws. And the reason these guys do this, in my opinion, is because it gets national attention, because we are the nation's capital. And you've seen this happen many times, haven't you, Anise?
Absolutely. I know it became an annual thing where we had to go to the Congress and protest and fight the fact that some congressmen, as you said, who we had never heard of, one really sticks in my mind because of his name, Duncan Hunter from California. Yeah. Yes, constantly trying to overturn D.C.'s gun laws. He even said that he might be a little more open to statehood for D.C. if we would allow our citizens to have to bear arms in their homes. And he made a direct connection between gun control, our gun laws, and our rights, our basic rights. These are people. There was another one from Virginia, Goodlatte, the same thing. And they really use these issues to run at home. They use these issues. We're like the whipping boy, you know, we're the canary in the mine, and we're the people who they're going to prove to their constituents that they have at least that one issue, gun control, under their control. And
well, you know,
it was a constant battle, constant.
Well, you know, it's funny because we've discussed gun control several times on the show. We've had Lad Everett, who I know you know, on to talk about it. And Kathleen has always made the point that gun laws in Arizona and gun laws in New York City shouldn't be the same. They should be different. They should fit the community. And I think most people agree with that. And so it's really unfortunate to have this guy from Ohio trying to rewrite our gun laws, because what might be right for people of Ohio isn't necessarily right for a place, for a city that's filled with politicians. There was a federal law passed about guns a couple of years ago that allowed you to carry semi-automatic weapons in national parks. And, you know, the big article in the Washington Post was, does this mean people will be able to walk around Lafayette Park, which is directly across the street from the White House, with AK-47s? And it's a good question. You know, the same gun laws that you have in a place like Arizona, where things are quite a bit different, Kathleen always points out, and she's right, are not the gun laws you should have in D.C.
And I'd like to throw out this idea, because in trying to explain to people who believe that everyone should have a gun, I say, look, in New York City, when you also look at poverty, if you've got somebody on a ranch who's very poor, they have a gun, they go out, they'll probably kill a deer, they'll kill a javelina, they'll eat the food. You're living in an urban area like New York City, in the Bronx or wherever it may be. You know, you don't have that wildlife, and people end up shooting each other out of anger, out of frustration, out of poverty. I think, and this probably is a totally unethical statement, but I think that has a lot to do with it. Because when, you know, I always tell the story of these two ladies that live next to me, and they were old, they never came out of their apartment. They were probably in their 60s and 70s. Every time I breathed, they knocked on my apartment door. I think they literally almost drove me to where my ex did take a hockey stick and was trying to bang down the door, because it became this constant thing, the fear they're going to knock. And they would not just knock, they would bang, and everything would shake in our apartment. It's environments that you should not have guns there. And I don't care, you know, so, oh, well, you know, it got so many bad people in New York. I was there 20 years. I never was robbed. I never was mugged. I used some common sense. But I think if I had a gun, I don't know what I would have done, because sometimes these ladies drove me to the point where I was just lost my sanity, because they drove me crazy. They really, it was just an awful situation. And so, you know, we have to think of these things. I mean, D.C. is still, you've got a lot of poverty. You've got a lot of people who are fighting just to make ends meet, and you throw some drugs, you throw some alcohol, and I know maybe people are getting angry at the statement, but it just doesn't make sense to have guns in big urban areas, because it's just not the same as some small town in Ohio.
Well, you know, and we should have the right to make those gun laws.
Yes. Can you imagine if you guys had tried to, if you were a state and you tried to pass a law in Ohio or in Wyoming? Right. What would happen? The people would go nuts.
The people of Washington, the people of Washington would go nuts if you tried to pass a law in Ohio, right, Anise? The liberals in Washington would be up in arms if we tried to pass a law in Ohio or Wyoming or in Arizona. The way, if there's any legislators from Arizona listening in, please pass the No Gun for Kathleen law.
I will admit
it. Because one of the reasons I'm walking around is because she doesn't have a gun.
I admit it. I'm a very passionate person. I'm very emotional. Don't drive me to craziness. And if I admit it, I should not have a gun.
Yeah, it would be a short drive.
That's a good point, though, because really they've proven that most guns in the home are used either in some kind of domestic dispute. Mm-hmm. It's not against somebody coming in to rob your house or assault you. It's usually used against a family member or suicide.
Exactly.
And who, besides that, with these assault rifles, who needs an AK-47, even in Arizona, to shoot a rabbit?
Exactly, or a deer. And I've always been opposed to people who have these really, the scopes, where you can shoot a deer from two mountains away. What is that about? I mean, that's rather scary. That's how people want to hunt. So, I have a lot of issues with that stuff, but I do understand my sister who lives on a ranch on the Mexican border, and there's maybe two or three sheriffs, and they control or they oversee a county that's bigger than some, states, back in the Northeast. So she is on her own with her family, and she needs to protect herself. But I don't think you need that same type of protection. It's a different type of, not fear, but they're different type of reality in the city of New York. And, they always had those studies in the Bronx and when they were looking at the homicide rate, and it was people who knew each other. Somebody caught somebody with their girlfriend, or they just were, whatever it was people you knew who were shooting each other, not, the guy coming to steal your home or take your life by you don't know who they are. So,
I love the fact that they give these laws titles like this, the Second Amendment Enforcement Act. I want to know when Congress is going to come up with the 14th Amendment Enforcement Act and apply that to the District of Columbia, or the First Amendment Enforcement Act and apply that to the District of Columbia, because it seems like we're always silenced and we never have equal rights. We have Taboo on line two calling in from the district. Let's talk to him. Let's see what Taboo has to say. Taboo, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon or good evening to all of you. I have a couple of questions, if I may ask.
Yeah, please.
You're talking about the guns and depending on where you live. Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask, which do you think you would need a gun for, a bear or wildcat or these gangsters and drug folk?
For all the
above, kill you.
Well, let me tell you where my sister, where I was in Douglas, it's a very, very remote area. You do have coyotes. You do have, to protect your stock. You have the cartels. Literally, where you're in a valley and you can see them signaling them to themselves from one mountain to the other. It's very, very remote. It's very isolated. You kind of need a shot if you're walking out and, you're faced with a rattlesnake. There are a lot of situations in the remote areas of Arizona where you do need to have protection. And I've always felt that people in that area those areas should be able to.
Kathleen, but what, right. Okay, we got that. But what about, who's going to protect you against the animals, and we all are animals, in the cities, who are far more dangerous in many ways than these wild animals?
Well, Taboo, that.
I think we kind of got away from the statehood issue in a way, because the law.
Well, no, you were talking about the guns and the.
Hold on. I'm going to answer your question. The law that the Supreme Court overturned was a law that D.C. residents had held up since 1974. So this was a law that our representatives on the council voted for, and this was overturned by the Supreme Court. We're saying that the people of D.C. should have the right to determine what they need for protection.
Right.
Now, that I agree with you. I have no problem with that.
And that's really what we were talking. It was just we were using examples, you know, how other people can determine what they need and why shouldn't the people of D.C. have that same right and be respected for it.
And you know, Taboo, that they've always – there's always been the right to have a shotgun in the District of Columbia to protect yourself in the home. What we're talking about here with this Jim Jordan law is to get rid of background checks, get rid of the ban on semi-automatic weapons. You know, so we're really not talking about banning guns in the District of Columbia.
Well, I think that when in having a discussion, I think that should be a lead off clarity, you know, to make sure we understand that, because you have to protect yourself. We live in a very predacious society. Predators live off each other, you know. Now, and, you know, I had one other question I asked. I don't want to take all of your time. How would you all describe, what type of government, or how would you describe our government? No, let me ask you this. Do we have just government?
You mean overall or in D.C.?
Well, let's say federal. Obviously, we don't have it in D.C., but let's say the federal government. Is our federal government a just government?
Well, I think, Taboo, it's just in the sense that we have input into the government. I mean, there's no...
That's not the question. Not the question. The question is, do we have our government as it stands as a whole, collectively, is it just?
Well, I think
this is part of the reason I'm... Let me tell you.
Yeah.
You might not want to answer it. I can understand. But the reason I'm asking...
Because
we can't...
You want me to answer it? Okay.
Yes. Anise, go ahead.
Go ahead, Anise.
Yeah, I say no. Absolutely not. Too few people have too much power in what is supposed to be a democracy in this country. Too few people have too much money, which is equivalent to power in this country, if it is supposed to be a democracy. So to me, that results in an unjust society.
Exactly. Now, I agree. Now, the reason I asked the question, because we cannot solve a problem until we identify the problem. We have to call it and say it what it is. And I agree, we have unjust government. We must find a way and correct it.
Well, I would say this. I would say this, that, you know, I have a belief that this is about the best government that is possible. I'm sure, you know, in a utopia, it would be a different situation. But because people are who they are, with our own agendas, with our jealousy, with our greed, with whatever, to me, it's still the best system to be able to work within and make a change. And so knowing that there's going to be unjustness, it's just a matter of the people who believe in the right thing, convincing other people who believe it to
believe
take action.
Okay, I would just say, I would agree with Kathleen in the sense that look, when it comes to talking about an unjust society, I think they're both right. I think Anise is right in the sense that there's such a disparity between rich and poor, between white and black, and between men and women, even in our society, that you really can't say that justice rules the society. Certainly, those things are unjust. But we have
but
the mechanism.
I'm not talking about society, Senator Brown. I'm talking about government, the people who set
and
policy.
In government,
there is a difference.
In government, we have a mechanism, and that mechanism is our input, which we lack here in the District of Columbia. And that's what's so wrong about what goes on here in the district, as you well know, Taboo. Okay. But if you look around the world, and, you know, because everything's relative, right? We have to compare ourselves to if you're going to hold up a standard to other people. Look, we had a society. I'm 60 years old. And when I grew up, when I was a kid, there was total segregation in parts of this country. And today we have an African-American president. Has that changed things completely for black people? Absolutely not. But it shows that the system can move with the proper input, and you can move it in both directions, liberal and conservative. And that's really the crux of our problem in D.C. is that we lack the input. We can't change our reality through the government because the government controls us. As Anise said, we are the last plantation.
Well, let me ask you all this because you all are in D.C., and having lived there, and this is probably not going to be a popular question, when you look at how you all would govern yourself and you became statehood, I mean, do you have faith in your D.C. council and that they are all doing the right thing for your residents when, let me ask you, have they embraced statehood?
You know, that's an excellent, excellent question because our focus is so much on the Congress and even the survey that we did. We were required by our government because it was under a grant. We were required to focus on visitors from outside of D.C. rather than the people in D.C. I think that is an excellent question. And I think one way that we can judge whether our elected officials are in full active support, it's okay if you talk about it. Okay, that's fine. Mm-hmm. That's easy. But are you really doing anything about it? I think the fact that our statehood delegation, our two United States senators, we don't call them shadows, two United States senators and one representative are unfunded, have no staff, really have no, they have an office which is in the basement. I think that fact says that they are not in full support, no.
Exactly.
I just have to say, well, what do you expect people to do if they don't get paid? They don't have a paid staff. If it's volunteer, if a constitutional supported movement is not funded, it's not real.
Right, and I would say to you, have your D.C. council, have they backed this bill, and do they go as I would see it part of their job to once a week hit an office, a senator office and a congressional office to say, okay, mm-hmm. we're going to work with our senators and our representatives, and we're going to show them that this is a unified front. Because I quite frankly, you know, and Senator Brown, I'm sorry I'm going to say this, but I've worked on this campaign to see, you know, they're fighting, you know, amongst each other for power, for notoriety to be out there instead of joining forces, and they don't embrace the statehood delegation or I would say your representatives, the you know, Senator Brown and Senator Krause and Representative Holmes, and I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the other one. Who is your representative?
Nate Bennett Fleming.
Right. I don't see those two groups working. What I see is the D.C. Council. They have their money. They're doing their thing. And they're not necessarily ready to embrace, you know, the rest of their what would you call yourselves? You're the statehood representative.
Congressional
delegation.
But, you know, you're absolutely
I agree with you, Kathleen.
Yeah, go ahead, Taboo.
I would say I agree with you, Kathleen. And therefore, in answering the question about the federal government and local government, I would say both are unjust because I, too, feel they are not doing their part in getting stated for us as citizens.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
Right. And I would, you know, hold their feet to the fire because I don't understand how they can be, you know, representing you all as in D.C. and yet not embracing this. And I have to throw out there, can you imagine if you do get statehood, how that sense of power, what it would do to the whole political system within D.C.? I mean, who was going to run? I mean, actually, I could see if that money came down, they were going to fund you. All of a sudden, Senator Brown, even though you have worked so hard and you're my good friend and I have so much respect for you because you do everything without a penny, that they would be the first to throw you under the bus. And that to me, you know, I it gets me very angry because you have done so much for this issue, yet, you know, they don't treat you with dignity and respect that they should. So I gotta say that.
And now we understand why they won't let you have a gun, and you understand why they won't let me have a gun.
No.
So we understand
that.
That's
true.
Well, thanks for calling in, Taboo.
That's up to the citizens also.
Yes.
Maybe we need to be addressing both governments, the federal, and we need to do sit-ins in both areas and the local.
Yes. And I think you need to have your councilman on record. have them on record where you go with a group of people and say, okay, we want to know, do you support statehood and what are you doing for it? And do you support Senator Brown, Senator Krause, Representative Holmes, and again, the new guy, I forgot his name. Those four people.
Fleming.
How do you support them in their push for statehood?
Yeah.
And this is the perfect time to do it because elections are up, election for mayor.
Right.
Half the council is running for mayor or whatever. So this is a good time to find out. But like I say, you know, you can say what you want, especially when people are running for. What are you doing? What are you
doing? Exactly.
Right.
And what will you do?
And we say this all the time. We say, you know, they'll stand up there and they'll call statehood a priority, but they don't put any money of any consequence into statehood, and they call education a priority, and they put $800 million a year into education. Well, of course, you shouldn't take any money out of education. It is a priority. But, you know, our mayor once said that an unfunded legislation is nothing more than a cruel promise. And really, the statehood issue in the District of Columbia is the cruelest promise of all because they elect people to an office that they don't fund. And we've been in these offices for 22 years. So, you know, it's time to step up to the plate and fund our effort and do something about it. But it's part of a complex problem, which Anise can tell you, is that we don't get enough people out there to demand this. And we have to connect the dots for people and show them that this is important for them. It's important for their city council to stand up for this. You know, they know it's important to educate their children. They know affordable housing in a city where you can't buy a house for less than $250,000 is important. They know health care is important, but we got to show them that statehood is important too.
Yes,
well, I think this is part of this. The education needs to be, I think, start our adults and our politicians. Now, I would like to say that, no offense to you, Senator Brown, you are a slave. You work and you don't get paid. You're an economic slave. We're all political slaves.
Yeah, well, you don't have to convince me, Taboo.
Well, yeah. I know that, but that's what I'm saying. But the reason I'm saying this is we need to educate ourselves that we are still living in slavery. Now, if we were to dissect why people don't fight for our rights, I would sum it up basically and say it's because we've been conditioned not to fight. We've been conditioned to live under the control of the federal.
Well, I think that's true. I think there is some truth to that.
Right. Now, slavery is a system by which you're controlled by this system. So that is a form of psychological slavery, and you're a physical slave. You work for no pay. So
that's right.
You know, we talk about slavery, but the reason for I'm saying this is about educating us about the condition in which we live in and live under. This country was founded upon slavery. It wasn't about taxes.
Mm-hmm. Well, my question
is because
is statehood, is just our basic condition, is that part, you're talking about education, is that part of the curriculum in the schools in D.C.? Mm-hmm. I mean,
no.
It
should be. That's my point.
No, and we're fighting to get it to be part of the curriculum in schools in the district. And we've made a little bit of progress, but not a lot. And our argument has been very simple. We've been out there saying, look, people in the District of Columbia that go to public schools grow up under this system. These are people that should understand this about democracy. If you're teaching them all the things that we've been talking about, that, you know, when you're 18, you have the right to vote and you know, you have this right and that right under the Constitution, under the Bill of Rights, you're not teaching them the truth in the District of Columbia because that's only partially true. We do have certain rights as citizens in the District of Columbia, but we're not full-fledged citizens in every sense of the word. Even, and I don't think people know this, when it comes to voting for president. We only get to vote for president because there's an amendment to the Constitution that allows us to do that. And under the 23rd Amendment, we we only have a limited right. We cannot have any more electoral votes than the smallest state. Mm-hmm. Right. So if we get to be the size of New York someday, you know, and would be entitled to, I don't know how many congressmen New York has. I think they have 20 some, you know, we would we would still only have one delegate and three electoral votes, not 22 electoral votes like we should have. And I don't think people understand that. Well, thanks for calling in, Tab. Right, so, we really appreciate it. I wish you the happiest holidays for you and your family. And I'm sure we'll hear from you again. We appreciate you listening in.
Thank you, Tab.
Right, bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
And you know, talking about education, too, we put out a brochure that we passed out, and I want to revise it so that it applies to D.C. residents also, but it's called the D.C. Statehood Mythbusters, and it addresses just certain things that people think. And I found about D.C. status, and I found out that there were some people who were offended because we just simply explained that we do not have a congressperson, and the person who occupies that office is called a delegate. And the reason that they're called a delegate is because we're treated like a territory, and that person has no vote. Well, I found out that this was considered very controversial by some people, that we were letting people know that the person who occupies that office is not a congressperson, although they are referred to on national TV, local, wherever, as a congressperson. We thought it was very important that people know that this is a delegate who has no vote. So it's just basic facts that are being kept away from D.C. residents and from people who are going to school to learn.
Well, and you know, we constantly have this fight, Anise. As you know, last year our delegate passed a law that the D.C. flag should be flown with the 50 states when veterans come back. And in veteran ceremonies, you know, some mother who lost her son in Afghanistan made an issue out of the fact that when they go to services and when they go to things that in Washington where the 50 state flags are displayed, the D.C. flag was never displayed. 200,000 people from the District of Columbia have served this country during wartime time. More than 2,000 of them have died in combat, and yet this one, you know, this little courtesy was never extended to us. And then they tried to take away our World War One memorial, too. Yeah. They wanted to nationalize it, make it a national memorial. And the sin there is not only that it was our memorial with the 299 people who lost their lives from the district in that war carved on the memorial, but it was also paid for by nickels and dimes that were collected by school children, district school children. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just one insult after another to the people of the district. And, you know, that absolutely has to end.
Platform to speak on than someone who sacrificed their life or risked their life for their country.
Right.
But they come back home and they don't have the rights that they were fighting for overseas. And maybe that's one thing we can do. I know active military are not supposed to participate politically, but as mm-hmm. soon as someone retires or gets out of the military, that would be a fantastic person to speak on behalf of statehood and full rights.
And that might, you know, people, I hate to say it because it sounds kind of trite, but that, you know, the veterans are been the cause now and getting a lot of momentum in that people, you know, they are the forefront cause of this decade. And so you should need to have to convince them that what is happening in D.C. is a terrible wrong, and that, you know, they're going making the biggest sacrifice of all for not only the rest of us, but for you all in D.C.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And you know, we have some veteran support. But, yeah, people should understand that the District of Columbia not only pays the highest per capita taxes in America, but we serve it higher than the national average and in the military. And you know that we've been a part of America and American history since America began. If you just look at our military history, Francis Scott Key was on a mission for the National Guard of the District of Columbia when he was taken hostage by the British, put on a ship in Baltimore Harbor and wrote the national anthem. The man that wrote Taps was a Civil War general who was a Congressional Medal of Honor winner from the District of Columbia. We have served this country in every capacity in which we can serve. And, you know, it's funny. There's a guy who's was the head of the ACLU who always laughs when I say this, and he said this is a really good comment, and that is that cutting people out in the District of Columbia, taking away our voice politically, would be like telling the people of Detroit that they can't drive cars. You know, we're the people that help make the policy. We're the people that's, you know, and I think most people outside the district have a misconception that we're all involved in politics. More of us in the District of Columbia are, less of us work for the government. More of us are people like Anise Jenkins who serve the public interest. They work for nonprofits. They work for public interest groups. They work for AARP and the National Organization of Women and even the National Rifle Association, for God's sakes. They work for nonprofit causes, and they're trying to make what they see as a better world. And we're great people, and we shouldn't be kept out of the conversation.
Let me ask, Anise, now with the new this year ending and the new year coming, what are your plans in 2014 for statehood? Do you guys have something set up in motion or are going to?
We really want to build the it's still twofold, but I just keep thinking about what works. You know, we should base this movement on what has worked. And it's always local. As they say, all politics is local. All human rights, civil rights, whatever movements you want to say, it all starts local. I mean, the Birmingham bus boycott became a global effort, but it started because people were forced to ride on the back of the bus. Black people couldn't be bus drivers. It was a local economic issue. And I think a lot of times we let ourselves get distracted when we focus on the national and the global. So our goal is to revive our D.C. Freedom School. We based it on the freedom schools that they had in the 60s. And what we did, we developed a documentary, we developed some brochures, we trained some speakers, and Senator Brown is excellent, just going into communities and just talking to people. And I think that is what we will be doing. It's focusing on local education and mobilization and just getting people to say, it's not a privilege to say you live in the nation's capital when you don't have any rights that you're supposed to have. And just get into the community and get people going on that issue and letting them see and getting them involved. That's basically what we want to do is revive the 3DC Freedom School and just go out and get people going.
And get that D.C. council on your side, too. Get them
back. That's it. It's local. Absolutely. You got
That's
it.
That's right.
You got it.
Well, thank you so much, Anise, for joining us today. We really appreciate you being on again. You're one of our favorite guests, and you work so hard on this issue that I personally want to thank you for everything you do because just like I don't get paid, Anise doesn't get paid either. She works hard on this. I hardly ever go to anything important that she's not there. So thank you so much. I hope you have a wonderful holiday, and I hope to see you over that time. But thanks again for being on.
I really am privileged to be on the air with you, and I think one thing we could do is build your listenership and get people to call in because they can be heard all over the country.
That's right.
That's
thank you. And Anise, I want to tell both you and Senator Brown that, you know, whenever I feel like kind of down and I hear you come on, you sound so kind and so calm and you're so inspiring because I know it's a hard fight. And I just thank God there's people like you that do this because you believe in it. And it's not that you're getting paid because I know you and Michael, I've seen you guys and you guys are just you believe in this and it's just inspiring. So thank you both.
Well, thank you, Kathleen.
And thank you, Senator Brown. Keep hope alive. Free D.C. Statehood now.
Statehood now, Anise.
Statehood now.
Happy holidays. Well, we're almost out of time here, folks. So Kathleen and I want to talk to our audience for a second and tell you how much we appreciate you tuning in and listening to us. And the exciting news is that Kathleen is coming to Washington on Wednesday.
Yes.
So our next show next week will be both here in the same room after the security sweep to make sure that neither one of us has a gun and can go at the other one. I think it'll make for an interesting show. So I'd like to wish everybody out there that's been listening to have a great holiday season. And thanks for listening to us. We'll see you next week.
And I'd like to just say thanks to Fall Rivers Community for having them on their community station. They broadcast our show. So that's another reason why you should call in. And if you feel passionate about an issue, come on and talk to us about it, because it is a national program. It is heard throughout the 50 states and who knows where else. And I want to thank BBS Radio too for being so good to us and really helping us out. And Donald and Doug is great. And you know, without them, we wouldn't have this kind of tool to use to promote what we believe are our good causes. So we want to thank them. And you can download our shows also on iTunes. And also, you can go to Stitcher.com. And also, they have our shows running, and you can download them through their internet talk show.
So, and now we're going to leave you with a song by Mariah Carey, All I want for Christmas is you, because that's what Kathleen and I want for Christmas. We want you. So call
that's
in,
right.
And we'll talk to you. Merry Christmas, happy Kwanzaa, happy Hanukkah, whatever you celebrate. May you be with your family and loved ones, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Yes, and I'll be kind to each other, and we'll see you from D.C. next Sunday.
Great.
Oh, you'll hear us from D.C. from next Sunday. There we go.
I don't want a lot for Christmas. There is just one thing I need. I don't care about the presents underneath the Christmas tree. I just want you for my own, more than you could ever know. Make my wish come.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.